A few weeks before I took those few days of study leave, someone casually asked me how I was doing, as we do. And without thinking much about it, I said, "Oh, running around like a chicken with its head cut off." And we laughed, acknowledging the busyness of life, the vibrancy of this place, and all that is alive and exciting that calls for our attention and energy these days. It's a rather intense image, isn't it? Running around like a chicken with its head cut off, somehow totally not in line with anything else in my childhood. This was an oft-used phrase in our house, and until this brief exchange only a few weeks ago of "how are you" and "aunts," I hadn't ever thought about what it really means, hadn't ever followed the story through. Those chickens, they're gonna stop running. When I returned from study leave, a different congregant asked how my time was. Did I rejuvenate? Did I realign? I told him I was weepy. That returning to the office after just 3 days away, I cried at the simplest things. The fourth, fifth grade class teacher's email that the kids were engaged, concerned about refugee children, the wall, and climate. They wondered together about their faith and the state of the world. In Hannah's grief class, she asked people to bring in sympathy cards they had received. Members, unprompted, brought in cards they had received from one another and from members of this community they hadn't ever met. They spoke of the impact of words on paper and knowing this community would live with them alongside their grief. Susan Ergang somehow navigated the sewage flood of 2019 just in time to open the downstairs so we could gather for Paul Turf's memorial celebration. A new member offered to take on a huge leadership role for the upcoming year. Chalice Circle participants spoke of how grateful they were for this place, that we could be authentic here. And coming into connection, partners were finding friendship in people 40 years their junior or senior. The one that got me and that still gets me, a family experienced a house fire, and a member offered her house to live in. It was all so much, nonstop miracles, little things that were making big impacts, heavy lifts lightened by the depth of affirmation. Plates were spinning everywhere, and I was weepy because I could feel ministry again. We have done a lot in these last 5 years together. I became your minister the summer Ferguson was set afire with rage and grief that had had enough. We then feared the toxicities of the national election and every day since have asked how to live our values in a world that seeks to silence our vision of the beloved community. We not only balanced but grew our budget to honor what we do here and what we do here together and to dream what is possible. We not only claimed who we are within these walls, we hung banners, we showed up at rallies, adopted a principle, became allies in hopes of becoming accomplices. And let's not pretend like any of those were tasks alone. From money to marketing to holding up a mirror to our culture, our hearts, our relationships, and faith have been tested, grown, and choicefully retethered. In these 5 years, we met grief in the face and held each other through impossible losses, too many of them too young and too often. We blessed babies and blessed marriages and welcomed over 100 new members into the life of this community without a word of marketing. If you were a long-term member, it was like a dam broke open into this sanctuary on some days, and we all found ourselves together, breathing, holding on in new ways. And then, of course, we also became a teaching congregation. Sue Flynn allowed us to have vespers, the quiet worship in night. She knew how to thank people, often, profusely, purposefully. Hannah has allowed us to have Welcome Table Wednesdays, a presence in the pulpit that is trustworthy and exciting. Her articulation of justice work has unstuck us and made us more brave on more than one occasion. Now, for visitors and newcomers, if you don't know this yet, today is Stewardship Sunday. Usually the title of the sermon is The Sermon on the Amount, but I'm not going quite there today. Today, I am about to break every rule there is in fundraising, every book, article, TED Talk, and collegial advice, and I have no idea if it is the right thing to do. They say people will only give generously if they are reminded excitedly, joyfully of the good work being done in their name with their money. They want to know what is possible. They have no interest in hearing about the need. I've decided not to seek an intern minister for next year. My oldest brother used to drink these huge coffee drinks in college. Whipped cream, caramel, who knows how many extra espresso shots. It was how he believed, it was how he learned he was capable of doing well. My friend couldn't take another day out of work after an entire month of her children just passing one illness and another back and forth. When she showed up to work standing at the helm of the board table to pitch the newest idea to her clients, her feverish, almost two-year-old was strapped to her chest, facing out as well. A young woman came up to her afterward and said, "You are so goals." There's a man in the Annapolis congregation who was an Olympic runner. When my supervisor, Fred, asked him to teach him how to lengthen his stride so he could become a faster runner himself, Fred assumed he simply needed to cover more ground. The congregant told him that he had to take more steps more quickly. We learn all the time, all around us in a million different ways, that success is productivity. It is pushing past health, sanity, sustainability. How do they do it, we ask, secretly a judgment of them, but also of our inability or ability to keep up. My brother's 20-year-old heart started having palpitations and showed signs of an arrhythmia from all of that coffee. His hands still shake 20 years later. My friend strapped her baby in for the ride home, and she, my friend, cried the whole way. I have been doing ministry. We have been doing congregational life as if we are trying to win a medal. And you know what's so tough about that? It's been really good. I am so proud of us. I love being a minister because of you, and I believe in Unitarian Universalism because of what we make possible. But someday soon, the chicken is going to stop running. I'm not seeking another intern minister because we need an assistant minister. Not me, okay? This isn't about me, it's we. I went into a one-hour meeting the other day and came out with 24 new emails. They weren't FYIs or, hey, can we meet on this or that date? You need to talk about your feelings around the eighth principle. You've got a great idea for a new program. You can't figure out how to navigate the personalities of your committees, the weight of the world, a recent diagnosis, your relationship. It's weighing on your hearts. And I'm not telling you this so that you don't email me. I'm not saying this so you don't ask for time. I have been unbelievably anxious about this moment for weeks because I don't want you to pull back on your expectation of what you deserve. If I go to work tomorrow and can clean out my email inbox this week, I will feel like I have failed you. Hear me. If our appreciation of Hannah has shown us anything this year, it is that we cannot risk bringing on someone else who needs more than a little cheerleading. At just shy of 300 members, almost 390 adult participants, and another 100 plus children and youth, you all deserve the attention of another religious professional. Not someone who replicates portions of my portfolio so that they can learn, but someone who can make this church feel small again, who can grow connection in the wave of growth, someone who can companion you into and out of leadership, someone who can support with pastoral care and think strategically about our justice work. Not someone who will do more and more and more, doubling down on making even more possible, but pastoring to what already exists, infusing health into our continued, bold, remarkable life here. I have not been able to be the minister you deserve lately. And I'm not saying that in a way that is self-deprecating. I have been through that stage of grief. I am sturdily in acceptance. You deserve to hear back from your minister, from a minister, within 2 days, let alone a week, let alone 2 weeks, if you reach out, and you deserve to have a minister who reaches out to you, who can check in with you after you've lost a loved one, not just accompany you as you are losing the one you love. New members deserve some hand-holding. New leaders deserve some onboarding, and long-term members deserve recognition for their ongoing commitment, recognition that isn't, will you serve again? You deserve to have things be different. They are so good right now, but they can be heart palpitations, baby strapped to your chest in the boardroom, Olympic discipline good, and that's not church, that's capitalism. That's depletion. That's ego getting in the way of saying, I deserve something different. This congregation has always made it work with too little. I loved you all the day the search committee told me you used to collect the garbage throughout the building, take it home on Sundays to your homes, and put it out in your own cans just so we didn't have to pay for trash collection. We're hard workers, and that won't change. We are a deeply relational, caring community, and that won't change, but we do need to figure out new ways of caring for one another. This isn't about me. It's about all of us and what we can make possible, not just urgently right now, but for a resilient long haul. So here's what this means in practice. I am asking us to raise the money for this position for 2 years. Not 2 years all at once, but hiring someone to serve in this capacity for 2 years. And then we can revisit it. Is it helping? Can we sustain this level of giving? What do we need to know about ourselves to welcome in a second minister with health? We've already received a $20,000 grant from the UUA in affirmation of this decision to be given out over the course of 3 years. They recognize this as a need that should be fulfilled, and they are helping us get there. In a few minutes, Lori Hopman is going to speak briefly, but what I'll say is this. If you are a friend of this congregation and haven't yet pledged, you're not a member, maybe you're considering it, maybe that title isn't for you, but you are here and participating, consider giving at a level that recognizes our relationship. And if you are a member who has and continues to know what is made possible for you personally, for your family, within this community and the larger one within which we exist, I ask that you think about what sustainability really looks like. It's not just about keeping the lights on or the staff paid fairly, something we can be proud of. Stewardship is about caretaking. It's about our respect for what we glean and an appreciation for what could, with the right relationship, still grow. May the trust offered in this message be felt, heard, and held. And may we each learn that speaking a word of need will not be cause for failure, but a rallying of actionable love. May it be so, and blessed be.